Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 14, Ideal Family Life, Text Number 5. Yadvad artam upasino, dehe gehe cha panditaha, virakto raktavad tatra, nri loke naratam nyaset, Yadvat Aratam, as much endeavor for one's livelihood as necessary. Upasinaha, earning. Dehe, in the body. Gehe, in family matters. Cha, also. Panditaha, one who's learned. Virakta, not at all attached. Raktavyat, as if very much attached. Tatra, in this. Riloke, human society. Naratam, the human form of life. Nyaset, one should depict. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. While working to earn his livelihood as much as necessary, maintain body and soul together, one who is actually learned should live in human society, unattached to family affairs, although externally appearing very much attached. Purport. This is a picture of ideal family life, which is the name of the chapter. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Ramananda Roy about the goal of life, Ramananda Roy described it in different ways, according to the recommendations of the revealed scriptures. And finally, Sri Ramananda Roy explained that one may stay in his own position, whether as a brahmana, a shudra, a sannyasi, or whatever. But one must try to inquire about life's goal. Atato Brahma Jignasa. This is the proper utilization of the human form of life. When one misses the gift of the human form of life, a form, by necessarily indulging in the animal propensities of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, and does not try to get out of the clutches of Maya, which subjects one to repeated birth, death, old age, and disease. One is again punished by being forced to descend to the lower species and undergo evolution according to the laws of nature. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha. Being completely under the grip of material nature, the living entity must evolve again from the lower species to the higher species, till he at last returns to human life and gets a chance to be freed from the material clutches. A wise man, however, learns from the Shastras and Guru that we living entities are all eternal, but are put into troublesome conditions because of associating with different modes under the laws of material nature. He therefore concludes that in the human form of life, he should not endeavor for unnecessary necessities, but to live a very simple life, just maintaining body and soul together. Certainly, one requires some means of livelihood. And according to one's varna and ashram, this means of livelihood is prescribed in the Shastras. One should be satisfied with this. Therefore, instead of hankering for more and more money, a sincere devotee of the Lord tries to invent some ways to earn his livelihood. And when he does so, Krishna helps him. Earning one's livelihood, therefore, is not a problem. The real problem is how to get free from the bondage of birth, death, and old age. According to this freedom, and not inventing unnecessary necessity, attaining this freedom, and not inventing unnecessary necessities, is a basic principle of Vedic civilization. One should be satisfied with whatever means of life comes automatically. The modern materialistic civilization is just the opposite of the ideal civilization. Every day, the so-called leaders of modern society invent something, contributing to the cumbersome way of life that implicates people more and more in the cycle of birth, death, old age, and disease. Yavat artam upasino dehe gehe chapandita virakta raktavan raktavat tatra nrine loke naratam nyaset. While working to earn his livelihood as much as necessary to maintain body and soul together, one who is actually learned should live in human society unattached to family affairs, although externally appearing very much attached. Here it mentions that life necessities, well, life is meant for maintaining the body. There's a verse, jivasya jivanam, that life's desire should not be aimed at sense gratification or economic development. One should just get as much economic development and sense gratification as necessary, because human life is meant for self-realization. That's from the Bhagavatam. Without knowing about the soul, without knowing about the existence of the soul, one will conclude that one is one's body. This body is myself, and therefore my goal of life is to serve my body. Now, even if one knows that, theoretically, that I'm not this body, still, one may not know what the soul, if whatever one's conception of the soul is, what the activities of the soul are. In other words, right now the activities of the soul are aligned with the activities of this gross and subtle body, because that's what we identify ourselves as, and therefore, chintyam apareyam cha pralayantam upashritya. They believe that to gratify the senses under the end of life is the prime necessity of human civilization. And they can't have any other belief. There may be so many varieties of isms and communism, socialism, capitalism, Marxism, whatever. But ultimately the whole idea is sense gratification. And we don't say sense gratification is a bad word. Devotees are going around saying sense gratification. Oh. As if it's a curse word. I curse you to gratify your senses. No, it means that the senses demand. And it's not bad that the senses are demanding, because that's their business. Just like it's not bad if you are driving your car and suddenly you see a red indicator on the dashboard that your car is running out of gas. You don't say, my dear car, you know, you're always trying to gratify yourself. You're always trying to get me to fill you up with gasoline and oil, but I refuse. We're going to be austere today. No more gasoline for a week. At least today's Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance day, so everyone fasts, including my car, from gasoline. I don't feed anyone today. No, when the red light goes on, you think, well, this is favorable. You don't smash the red light and think, you're bothering me. No, it's good that you have a red light that goes on. Similarly, if one is, the senses are demanding, that's the sign of health. In one sense. Of course, sometimes the senses demand because we're just accustomed to gratify the senses, and at a certain time, the senses come back and make demands. If a person is actually healthy, then the demands of the senses will also be healthy. Sometimes I was listening to something today. Sometimes they tell people, you should drink 8 glasses of water every day. Did you ever hear that? 8 ounces. Of course, I don't know how much that's in liters, but it's I guess 8 ounces, that would be like 2 or 3 liters a day. And you feel guilty. Today I didn't drink 8 glasses of water, therefore I must be sick. Because that thought itself will make you sick. We work more by our consciousness than we do by the gross body. On the other hand, there's no real scientific evidence that shows that 8 ounces is good for you. For whatever reason, you know, whether it's supposed to cleanse your body, it doesn't cleanse your body. And, or it's supposed to make you, your body needs 8 ounces. It actually doesn't, it needs as much, the way you can tell if your body needs water is how. Hopefully you don't get that far. What's that? You're thirsty. Wow. You actually believe in God. The guy did, and he just created thirst. Oh, thirst is just, you know, some kind of extra thing that was thrown in there by evolution. We don't listen to thirst. Just say, how do you know when it's time to eat? You're hungry. It's too simple. You have to get a special indicator that says eat. Put it in your mouth, wait 5 minutes, says take it out, eat. People have become so divorced from reality. It's like they don't even know it's time to breathe. Time to breathe. Oh, really? I don't. Don't breathe too much. So all these things are, generally speaking, if one is living a normal life and not excessively trying to gratify their senses, just like sugar. People get addicted to sugar. And when you get addicted to sugar, then the body will demand sugar, because that's the addiction. And when you give up sugar, then the body stops demanding sugar. Because all the physiological reactions for eating sugar, especially white sugar, go down, so the body doesn't feel it needs it anymore. Just like as soon as you eat sugar, then immediately the body has to secrete sugar and other things, from the pancreas, it has to secrete the enzymes necessary, the insulin necessary to store the sugar somewhere. If you're not using it, then it has to store it. And therefore, as soon as you eat sugar, what happens? Your blood sugar goes down. And because your blood sugar goes down, therefore you feel hungry. And before, if you eat more sugar, what will be the result? Is that the pancreas, if it's still functioning, will actually secrete more insulin and store the sugar away as fat. And the only thing that's going to happen is you'll get more hungry and you'll get fatter. So the more you eat something like pure sugar, which is pure carbohydrate, then the more the body will store it away as fat and the hungrier you'll get. And as soon as you stop eating sugar, then whatever, you know, storage you have of the carbohydrates in the form of fat will be utilized. You won't feel hungry anymore. You won't have to eat as much. But people don't believe that there's such a thing as intelligence, universal intelligence, that Krishna has created everything very perfectly, and that if we follow the laws of nature and live simply, that it's not that we're going to suffer, actually our suffering will diminish. Now, here it says that the goal of life is to get free from birth, death, old age, and disease. Now, how many people are... Most people worry about dying, of course. People are not worried about taking birth again. They don't believe in it. The most simple thing is that we're taking birth at every moment. You don't have to worry for the next birth. Our body is changing at every moment. And yet we don't die. If the change of our body meant our death, then we would have died before we even came out. We would have died at the time of conception, because even at the time of conception, when the soul enters into the semen and sperm, or into the egg from the semen, then the soul's not dying, but the little body is going through so many changes. And we're still going through changes, and yet we're not disappearing. We're still here, more conscious or less conscious. So there's no such thing as death, but there is such a thing as taking another body. And as Prabhupada warns here, this frivolous attitude that you people are just, you know, or as Prabhupada went in one conference, and Prabhupada is explaining about transmigration of the soul. And the other Indian gentleman who was at the conference said, Swamiji, why are you talking about this Hindu doctrine of transmigration, reincarnation? And Prabhupada said, it's not a Hindu doctrine that 5,000 years ago Krishna didn't tell Arjuna, my dear Arjuna, we're going to fight this battlefield, in this battlefield, you and me. I'm going to be your chariot driver and you're going to be the warrior. Now, you might die. So before we fight this battle, I should teach you some Hindu philosophy. Because I'm a Hindu god, and Hindu gods speak Hindu philosophy. And you're a Hindu also, so this is perfect. So according to Hindu philosophy, all Hindus have bodies that change. They keep on changing. Others, Christians, Mohammedans, whatever, they don't change their body. Only Hindus, because this is Hindu philosophy. Now, luckily for Hindus, they have a soul. So when they change their body, they get another one, unlike the others who don't have a soul. Now, everyone has a body that's changing. Doesn't matter whether in any species of life, doesn't matter what our religion is, what our belief is. We may believe my body's not changing. We may believe the little picture we have when we were a little baby is exactly the same picture we have now. We may believe it, but then, as Prabhupada says, just like there's a saying in Bengal, that just like a goat can eat anything, so a madman can say anything. So anyone can claim my body's not changing, but that's just madness. And anyone can say, well, I'm changing. Really? Who were you when you walked in? I was Bill. And who are you now? Mary. And when you walk out, who you be? I'll be Peter. Some people are like that. They have multiple persons in their body. But for most of us, we walked in here as a certain identity, and we're going to walk out as a certain identity. Although our bodies and our minds and our intelligence and everything will be different, but we'll be the same. Now, that same person, we have this human form of life, has a human form of life, and he can understand he's not the body, and that there is a God, and that his, as a spiritual being, different from the material energy, he can be happy by serving the source of pleasure of consciousness and pleasure, Krishna. But the animals, they can't understand that. What to speak of the plants and insects? And even if one gets the body of a demigod, one will not be interested generally in spiritual life, in spiritual advancement at least, because one is enjoying too much. If you're having a fantastic feast full of pizza, samosas, gulab jamuns, and you're just enjoying, and someone starts talking about birth, death, old age, and disease, you think, well, this is really out of place. It is out of place. It's not the time to talk about, you know, Rukmini's description to Krishna of what a body's like, of a husband's like, full of hair and skin and flesh and blood and whatever. It's not the time to talk about that. Let's read Krishna book during prasadam. Similarly, if you're in the heavenly planets, it's not the time to think about how horrible the material world is, because people want to understand. For them, it's great. Wow. Flying, I have mystic powers. I'm going to live here for billions of years or millions of years. My wife looks like the goddess of fortune. My husband looks exactly like Narayan with two hands. It's not the place that people actually take birth, death, old age, and disease seriously. It's a vacation from all that, temporarily. So only in this human form of life, and especially in Kali Yuga, and it takes a lot of problems for us to take it seriously. Otherwise, as they have that song, merrily, 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 life is but a dream. They're right, it's a dream. And people are trying to enjoy that dream until it turns into a nightmare. And then they try and wake up. So people are thinking, I'm enjoying this dream, this is fantastic, everything is going my way. You know, it's going to get only improvement. You know, soon if I don't like my reality, I put on these goggles and I'll have my own reality. I can go to, you know, heaven and hell in 5 minutes. Virtual reality. There I can become Indra or even Lakshmi. Whatever I want to be, I can be in that world. And then Krishna is not going to settle. First of all, if people die early, for most people, that's very good. Why is it good for people who die early who are sinful? Because if they die early, then they'll do less sinful activities, and they'll go down to, maybe they'll won't be degraded into the lowest species of life, they'll be degraded into the next lowest species of life. If they stayed around any longer, they'd be degraded to the lowest species of life. And that way they'd have to waste even more millions of years to get back to the human form of life. But by Krishna's mercy, they die early, and because they have less opportunity for sinful activities, they come back in a species of life which will only take, you know, a long time, but less time to get back to the human form of life. And at the same time, those who are interested in spiritual advancement but are caught up in materialistic culture, for them it's also good because their hopes, mental hopes, actually material existence is not very pleasant. Even the topmost enjoyment of sense gratifications in the material world are actually not all that, what they're made out to be. What the poets are singing about, what they're depicting in the movies, whatever. It's the idea of them, the looking forward to them, which is the most impelling thing about the material world. The expectation far exceeds the actual experience. So, in the minds of every conditioned soul, and even devotees who are aspiring to come to the spiritual platform, then the expectation that maybe I missed out on something. Maybe if I had this opportunity, then I'd actually enjoy if I got another chance. If I went back in my time machine, went back to the first grade, and got 100% on the spelling test, then life would have been good. I was just a little close, but, you know, do it all over again. Yes, you will get an opportunity to do it all over again. Maybe not in the human form of life, but maybe in the human form of life. But it's going to be the same problems, or maybe even worse. In any case, Krishna arranges it just so we can get out of these expectations. We can get free from them. The problem is that we suffer, and then we forget. We forget that we were suffering very quickly. Often in the airports we go and we meet people and they'd stop when you would offer them a book. And you give them a book and they seemed interested. You wonder, well, what's wrong? This person's interested. And then you say, you know, where are you coming from? I just came from a funeral. You know, maybe for the first time in their life they realized some people die. There's such a thing as death. And therefore they become a little bit more introspective. And then they take the book, and they go back, and they watch television, and they think, oh, that was all nonsense, you know. I'm not going to die. I'm a good person. Good people don't die. Then they forget very quickly. Immediately. As I said, Daksha, he was quite offensive to Lord Shiva, therefore Virabhadra cut off his head, and he got the head of a goat. But very shortly after that, he left his body with the head of a goat and came back as Daksha again, another millennium. But Daksha, he has a body which is, and a consciousness meant to propagate. So he wanted to create progeny because he's a Prajapati. And therefore he went through great austerity and was able to chant these some mantras perfectly, so much so that Lord Vishnu came with his many of the demigods riding in the back of Garuda with 1,000 arms. And Daksha, when he saw Vishnu, became so overwhelmed with pleasure that he actually had to sit down. He couldn't remain standing. He was so overwhelmed with ecstasy. And then Vishnu came and said, "My dear Daksha, what can I do for you?" He said, "Well, actually, I'd just like to have the opportunity to have unlimited sex life." "So be it." And Vishnu left. Because that's his duty. He could have asked, "Please bring me back to the spiritual world. I want to live forever, full of bliss and knowledge and ecstasy, loving you." No, because he was conditioned. And immediately, he forgot all the ecstasy and he was back as Daksha again. So material nature is meant for forgetfulness of who we are, what reality is, and we're already forgetful. And even we get some insight into Krishna consciousness, Maya will always try to help us forget it. Of course, the more one advances in Krishna consciousness, the harder Maya has to try. Therefore, we find devotees, when they leave Krishna consciousness, often they become more degraded than an ordinary karmi. Because they really have to indulge in sense gratification to forget. They just can't forget. Even Hiranyakashipu, he tried to forget Narada and Muni and Parvati Muni in the form of birds, chanting Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Well, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha were doing austerities. The demigods tried to foil their austerity by sending Narada Muni and Parvati in the form of little birds chanting in a loud voice, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So Hiranyakashipu tried to get the birds away. Luckily he didn't kill the birds, I guess. Maybe he tried to, but Narada Muni is quite good, even in the form of a bird. Couldn't kill the birds, he couldn't get them away. So he spent the whole day listening to Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. What do they call that, tech music? So he was completely bewildered. You know, he couldn't get it out of his mind. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Just going through his mind constantly. This is not good. I hate Vishnu and he's in my mind. So he said the only way of getting out of it, I'm going to come back. I'm going to enjoy with my wife tonight. That should put an end to it. But he was enjoying with his wife and thinking in his mind, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om. He couldn't get rid of it. And therefore, because he was thinking of Vishnu while he was engaged in sex for propagation, therefore, Prahlad Maharaj was born. Took birth. Because his mind was absorbed in Krishna consciousness. But he tried to forget. And everyone in this material world, that's what material life is meant for. Simply to forget about God. Forget about birth, death, old age, and disease. And modern society is giving people the opportunity to forget about birth, death, old age, and disease. That's what the internet is meant for. That's what modern education is meant for. That's what all these different technologies are meant for. Generally speaking, they're meant actually for Krishna consciousness, but they're being misused to put people into forgetfulness. So that they don't think about birth, death, old age, and disease. And if you ask about those things, people think you're rather strange. Why you, you know, what's wrong with you? Or as one devotee told me, he said, "When I was younger, I asked my mother, you know, why do people die? And my mother's reaction was, Are you sick?
No.
Something wrong with you? Some people don't even want to consider it. But an intelligent person considers it. Tasyaiva heto priyate to kovido. A kovida, an intelligent person. And therefore he strives for spiritual life in any circumstance. Whether one is a grihastha or a vanaprastha, whatever one, one can stay, stanesti tashu dikitam tanovang monovira. Stay in any circumstance, but try to hear about Krishna. Try and accept the simplicity of Krishna consciousness. It's not complicated. We eternal souls, we're meant to serve Krishna. We'll be happy if we serve Krishna. And we should try to avoid unnecessarily complicating our lives so that we spend time making our lives, trying to overcome the problems that we create by complicating our lives more than necessary. Instead, spend the time trying to advance in Krishna consciousness so the real complications of birth, death, old age, and disease can actually be solved. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
Yes.
So, thank you, Maharaj. One point of the purport was that our job or what we will do in our life should be according to the Shastra or Varnashrama. But I remember, you know, when I was in high school, I didn't have a clue what I'm going to do in my life. So all the professions they show us, I just couldn't find, and I just stay in sports. But my point is that even devotees, sometimes I can see they're changing their jobs many times and still looking for some.
It's Kali Yuga. The real thing is to get money for getting something to eat. That's the real problem. So it's probably right here. He said, therefore, instead of hankering for more and more money, a sincere devotee, the Lord tries to invent some ways to earn his livelihood.
Yes.
And when he does so, the Lord, Krishna, helps him. And somehow or another get money. So we can get something to eat. That's the whole problem of life. You get something to eat, your life is all right. A little shelter. That's all. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grandaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.